Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Lord Brahma speaking. He says, "By His will I create. Lord Shiva destroys, and He Himself, in His eternal form, as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies." Srila Prabhupada's purport. The conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. The one is Lord Vasudeva, and only by His different energies and expansions are different manifestations, both in the material and in the spiritual worlds, maintained. In the material world also, Lord Vasudeva is everything. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.19, Vasudeva sarvam iti, everything is Vasudeva only. In the Vedic hymns also, the same Vasudeva is held to be supreme. It is said in the Vedas, Vasudevat paro brahman nad chanyorta sti tatvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudeva. And Lord Krishna affirms the same truth in the Bhagavad Gita 7.7. Mata parataram nanyat. There is nothing above me, Lord Krishna says. So the conception of oneness, as overly stressed by the impersonalist, is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. Lord Vasudeva is one without a second, but because He is all-powerful, He can expand Himself as well as display His omnipotencies. The Lord is described here as omnipotent by three energies, Tri Shakti Drik. So primarily, His three energies are internal, marginal, and external. This external energy is also displayed in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Similarly, the internal potency is also displayed in three spiritual modes, Samvit, Sandini, and Hladini. The marginal potency, or the living entities, is also spiritual, Prakritim Vidhina Me Param, but the living entities are never equal to the Lord. The Lord is Nirasta Samya Atishaya. In other words, no one is greater than or equal to the Supreme Lord. So, the living entities, including even such great personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are all subordinate to the Lord. In the material world also, in His eternal form of Vishnu, He maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. So this is a very nice description of the hierarchy coming down from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through all His different energies in the different various spiritual realms and material realms, even down to an ant. So everyone has an authority, and everybody is subordinate to someone. So even, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, that even great personality as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are all subordinate to the Lord. And yet the Lord is so humble. He eternally takes a form as a barefoot cowherd boy, carrying a bamboo flute and herding cows. So he becomes subordinate to the cows. He's herding them. He's taking care of them. He's maintaining them. He's subordinate to his mother, Yashodamayi. He's subordinate to everyone. So Krishna sets the example of how to be humble, how to take the subordinate position, because that subordinate position is our constitutional position. It's our reality. So therefore, the acharyas, they are teaching us to develop this particular mentality of das, 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 anudas, that I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. That is our eternal constitutional position in every situation, wherever we are, forever and ever. So that's reality. When I'm not in my constitutional position as das, 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 anudas, the servant of everyone, then that situation where I'm not in my constitutional position is known in the Sanskrit language as maya, illusion, false conception of the self. So we have a false conception of ourself. Everybody in the material world is suffering from an identity crisis. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they came from. They don't know where they're going. They don't know what to do in this life. They don't know what happens after death. In other words, everyone's in ignorance, complete ignorance. And the material establishment of education keeps you in that ignorance. We have to bow down and offer our respectful obeisances every day to Srila Prabhupada, because he's the only one that's given us the understanding of reality and how to come out of that ignorance and act as an eternal spiritual being, instead of a conditioned soul in ignorance in the material world, controlled by our senses, controlled by our desires, controlled by our tongue, and controlled by the three modes of material energy. So even Lord Brahma is saying here in this verse, he says, by his will I create. So even Lord Brahma, as I said yesterday, he's the subordinate creator. You know, we call him the creator, but we should understand he's the subordinate creator. By his will, by Krishna's will, and by Krishna's empowerment, Lord Brahma creates. Lord Shiva destroys. And Krishna expands himself as into Vishnu Tattva forms, and as this Vishnu, Mahavishnu, he maintains everything. So creation is usually and always, I should say always, not usually, creation is always done in the mode of passion. And destruction is always in the mode of ignorance. Why is destruction in the mode of ignorance? Because something has been created and maintained and now we're destroying it. That's stupid, doesn't make sense. So that's the mode of ignorance. And maintenance is the mode of goodness. So I remember a class in 1975 when I was living in the Los Angeles temple. And Prabhupada finished his class by saying, "So, if you follow all my instructions that I have given you, the chanting of the rounds, attending the classes, the kirtans, the aartis, honoring Mahaprasad, going out, distributing the books, trying to benedict the conditioned souls." He said, "So if you follow all my instructions, I guarantee that at the end of this life, you go back home, back to Godhead." Prabhupada gave a guarantee. So in the Brahmachari Ashram, we were all pretty excited. Wow, Prabhupada gave a guarantee. We're all going back to Godhead. Ki jai. Piece of cake. That's what we were thinking. Because in those early days, we had a lot of energy, and we could follow the process, follow Prabhupada's instructions, no difficulty. What we didn't know is that to maintain it for a whole life is a little different. We came in the mode of passion, we were able to follow. But would we be able to maintain it our whole life? Or would we be overcome by the mode of ignorance and gradually start slipping away, slipping down, slipping out, giving up? I remember when I was interviewing devotees for my book, Radha Damodar Vilas, I was speaking to one devotee from New York who had left the movement. And I was asking him questions. He was giving me his remembrances. And he was speaking so eloquently and so nicely, and he had such nice memories. So when he finished, I asked him, why did you leave? It didn't seem reasonable for me that he should leave. So he said, well, you know, I was studying the books, and I was reading what Prabhupada wrote, and I wasn't getting mystic siddhis, I wasn't becoming purified, I wasn't getting what the book said you're supposed to get by chanting. So I left. After 6 years, he gave up. In other words, he had no patience. He thought that within 6 years, he'd become a pure devotee with all mystic potencies. And he didn't have it, so he thought the process doesn't work. He should have thought, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Not that the process doesn't work, but maybe I'm not doing it correctly. Anyway, he left. But he was favorable. He wasn't negative or anything. But I learned from that experience that we have to have patience. And this is what Rupa Goswami is emphasizing in his teachings, that in order to be successful in devotional service for the rest of our life, we have to come to the platform of the mode of goodness. And we need two things. Dharyat, patience. We need patience. No one becomes a pure devotee in one day or 1 year. It's a lifetime's endeavor. And even in one lifetime, we may not accomplish it. So patience is required. And the second quality that's essential is utsahan, enthusiasm. We should do our devotional service enthusiastically. Why is that so important? It's so important because we're doing it for God, for the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Being, the Supreme Significant, the Supreme Lover, the source of everything, the cause of all causes. We should be enthusiastic that we've been taken out of ignorance and now we're actually engaged in the service of the Supreme. Wow. So we have to understand this. We have to be conscious of this. And that reminds me of another thing that Prabhupada taught me, because in another class, he said something that really caught my attention. So he was speaking about we have to become fixed up. So then he said, so don't be Krishna unconscious. Now that caught my attention because I'd never heard the phrase Krishna unconscious before. So I perked up and I was listening very carefully. He said, don't be Krishna conscious. First become conscious. Then you can become Krishna conscious. We have to become conscious who we're dealing with. We have to become conscious that we're spirit soul. We have to become conscious that even Lord Brahma, even Lord Shiva, they are offering respects, honor and respect to Krishna. So what about us? What's our position? They are so enthusiastic doing their service. What about us? So first become conscious. That means no sleeping in the class, because then you're unconscious, right? That reminds me of another thing Prabhupada said. So at the end of one class, he said, are there any questions? He looked around. No one raised their hand. So then he said, does anybody have a question? Nobody raised their hand. I never raised my hand ever to ask Prabhupada a question. Because I was thinking, if I ask some foolish question, I'm going to appear like an idiot in front of everybody. So I just took shelter of Shravanam. I would just hear and listen. Anyway, no one asked any questions. So Prabhupada said, if you're not asking questions, it means either you didn't understand the discussion or you were sleeping. So then Prabhupada decided that he would ask a question. No one else was asking questions, so Prabhupada asked the question. He says, is there any difficulty chanting in the kirtan? And we all said no. Then Prabhupada said, is there any difficulty during the aarti, you're chanting and dancing in front of the deities? No, we said no. And then Prabhupada said, is anybody having any difficulty that after the chanting and the dancing, honoring Mahaprasad? And we said, no, Srila Prabhupada. No one had any difficulty honoring Mahaprasad. And then Prabhupada said, but that is Lord Chaitanya's three-point program, chanting, dancing, and feasting on Mahaprasad. Lord Chaitanya's three-point program. So since that day in 1975, I've been very enthusiastically engaged in Lord Chaitanya's three-point program, chanting, dancing, and honoring Mahaprasad. Because I'm following Lord Chaitanya's movement. But we have to do the other things also. But these are the three essential points. Why are these the three essential points? Because this is how we come out of Maya. This is how we become humble devotees. This is how we learn that we're spirit soul and behave like an eternal associate of the Lord. And we are no longer attracted to Maya. So in the beginning, our hearts are full of Maya. We bring our bag and baggage with us. We don't have much devotion. But as we continue this process of chanting, dancing, and honoring Mahaprasad, gradually the material desires and material conceptions decrease and the spirituals increase. So it's described, the process of devotional service is described like this, that we come across the devotees for the first time. We get a book, we get invited to a Sunday feast or something, and we're really impressed. We're thinking, wow, these people, they're so dedicated, they're so sincere. That was my first experience when I first came to the temple in Soho Street. I was already following a yoga process. I was already vegetarian, doing the yoga process. I had my sadhana, the whole thing, but it was mayavad. And then I saw the devotees, they were always offering obeisances to one another. And I thought, wow, these devotees, they're so humble. Because I had read in all the books of the mayavadi books that I had been studying, those yogis, that the true symptom that you're making advancement in spiritual life is humility. And I saw the devotees always offering obeisance to each other, and I thought, wow, these people are really sincere. They're really advanced. So I thought, let me come and join this group. Because I was going from guru to guru, group to group, checking it out, trying their process. So I thought, okay, let me come try this process. And if something better comes along, I can always move on. Nothing better ever came along. So we're so fortunate that we've reached the topmost level of spiritual life, because the Shastra says that to come to the platform of the process of bhakti yoga, it means that in previous lifetimes, you visited all the holy places. You've taken your bath in all the holy rivers. You've chanted all the mantras and studied the Shastras. And you've received the benedictions of all the holy persons, the sadhus in the holy different places. So now, at 80%, you've accomplished the final 20%. You've come to devotional service. So because of what we've done in our past, we've come here. We're at this level now. So everybody, when they come to devotional service, it should be understood that we've already completed 80% of what is required in order to go back home, back to Godhead. Now the final 20%. So we may all be at different levels. Someone may be at 81, someone may be at 82 or 84, but we're always practically on the same level. And at any moment, any one of us can slip and momentarily forget. And therefore, by the association of each other, we stay fixed in devotional service. I remember a morning walk in Los Angeles Temple, where Prabhupada was discussing this particular verse in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhag. That if you've taken up this process, you're living in the temple, you're performing devotional service, but if you fall down, and Krishna says in that verse, even if you fall down to the most abominable sinful activity, if you pick yourself up and carry on in devotional service, sadhur eva samantavya, Krishna says, I still will consider you to be a sadhu. Because Krishna understands, we're like children in devotional service. We haven't done devotional service in past lives. This is very rare to come to the position where you're being trained up to serve directly the Supreme Lord. So we're newcomers. So children will naturally make mistakes. So Krishna can overlook that. So Prabhupada was explaining that even if a devotee falls down to the most abominable situation, if he comes back, Krishna will consider it was just a temporary fall down, just an accidental slip, and he's situated again as a sadhu. However, Prabhupada said, if the fall down is premeditated, you're planning it, you're thinking of it, you're desiring it, then Prabhupada said, that is the greatest offense. And Krishna, you can't fool Krishna. Only if it's an accidental offense, Krishna sees you as sadhu, but not if you've been desiring and thinking of these things, of some fall down. So then one devotee raised his hand and he asked a very profound question. He said, Srila Prabhupada, how do we know if a fall down is accidental or premeditated? So Prabhupada paused for a moment. And then he said, if he comes back, I consider that it was an accidental fall down. If he comes back, I consider it an accidental fall down. So when I heard that, I assumed someone falls down, they go away for a week or two, and they come back, and Prabhupada will consider it an accidental fall down. That's what I was thinking originally. But after many, many years in Krishna consciousness, I got a much more profound understanding, which I'll share with you. And this relates to two of my godbrothers who were quite, well known in our ISKCON movement and were doing very important service. But after Prabhupada left, they fell down, they fell away to the most abominable lifestyle. But then, years later, both of them contracted AIDS. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. So one of those devotees in 1970, he had one time been Prabhupada's personal servant. He went to Australia and had started the Australian ISKCON mission. So when the Australian devotees heard that he had AIDS and he was going to die within a short period of time, they organized a collection. And they were able to collect money and they sent him a ticket to fly to Australia, Melbourne, Australia. He was so far gone in his health that he practically almost died on the plane. He was in economy, and the stewardess saw his pitiable condition and brought him to first class and was nursing him, trying to keep him alive. Anyway, he arrived at the temple. The devotees picked him up, and he stayed there for some short time. And the devotees were glorifying him. And he ended up leaving his body with a garland of the Lord, the devotees chanting Hare Krishna in his room. And then I remembered what Prabhupada said. If he comes back, I consider it an accidental fall down. And I was like amazed. He'd been gone for like 25, 30 years. And now he looks like he's gone back to Godhead. Hearing the chanting, the whole mantra was on his lips as he left his body in the temple. And then the other person also had AIDS, and he was now living in his home with his mother. And so the doctor had come and trying to help him overcome the AIDS. But as the doctor left, he said to this devotee's mother, "It's hopeless. There's nothing more I can do. At most, I give him 2 weeks to live." And then the doctor left. So then the mother went into the room and she chastised her son. "Look at yourself. What a pitiable condition. The best part of your life, where you actually did something worthwhile, was when you were with the Hare Krishnas." So she chastised him. Anyway, that night, she had a dream. Prabhupada came to her and told her, "Call the Los Angeles temple." So the next morning, she searched, found the temple telephone number, called the Los Angeles temple. Someone answered. And she said, "I'm the mother of my son. He was a sannyasi in your movement. His name was so-and-so." They said, "Really?" "Yes. And he's about to die." "Where is he?" "Oh, he's in my home here, just 2 hours away from the temple." They said, "Well, we can bring him here." "Yes, that would be wonderful if you could do that. Well, give us your address." So the devotee sent out a van and brought him back to the temple, put him in a very nice room across the street from the temple. And he was attended to by a devotee 24 hours a day. Prabhupada tape was playing. He was getting Mahaprasad every day. And he left his body hearing the holy name. And again, I was like astounded because, you know, he was in complete Maya. Everybody knew that these two people were in complete Maya. And yet, look how they left their bodies. And I had several realizations. One of the realizations I had was that Krishna never forgets the service that you render to him. And Krishna honors that service. And he doesn't look at the fall down. He's not concerned with the negativity. He's not concerned with what we do wrong. His focus is the positive, what we do correctly, how we're coming back home, back to him. And so in reciprocation for the service that they rendered to Krishna, he reciprocated and arranged that they would come back to the temple. He made that arrangement. Then it was up to them to think of Krishna at the last moment. Because in the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, shloka number 5, 6, 7, and 8, Krishna says again and again that if you remember me at the time of the death, I guarantee you go back home, back to Godhead. Ashamshaya is the word he uses, without any doubt. And he repeats it 4 shlokas in a row. That's how important it is that at the end we remember Krishna. And how do we remember Krishna? By remembering his name, by remembering the mantra. And that's one of the major reasons why we chant japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, so that we can put a samskara in our brain, in our consciousness, to take shelter of the holy name. When we are on our deathbed, when all the senses are finished, you may even be paralyzed, can't move. The only thing you have left, you have no energy to do anything. The only thing you have left is your mind. And if you can remember the holy name and chant the holy name in your mind, then ashamshaya, without any doubt, you go back home, back to Godhead. So I saw this. And then I remembered what Prabhupada had said. If he comes back, I consider it an accidental fall down. And I had read in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Leela, the Damodar Leela. You know the Damodar Leela. Hayagriva and Manikuvara were cavorting naked with beautiful girls in a lake. And then Narada Muni came by, and the girls were so shy, they covered themselves. They were so embarrassed, and they were begging forgiveness. But those two boys, in a state of intoxication, they said, oh, this sadhu has now come. He's ruining our fun. So Narada Muni said, oh, boy, you guys are really puffed up, you know. Well, you want us to be naked? No problem. I give you the benediction that you can stand naked as trees. And when they heard that, they went, because they knew he was a sadhu. And that whatever he said was going to be true. And now they were in shock. And Narada Muni, when he saw how shocked they were, well, he's a devotee, he's a Vaishnava, he's got a soft heart. So he thought maybe I was a little too heavy. But once you utter and the words come out, you can't retract them that didn't happen. So he added something. He said, however, you will become trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj when Lord Krishna performs his pastimes on earth, and you'll get his darshan. So he added that to the curse, which was a benediction. So here we are now. It's Damodar Leela. And Mother Yashoda has tied up Damodar to the grinding mortar because he's been a naughty boy. She says, now I'm going to go back to the kitchen to cook milk sweets for you. You just stay here. So she goes back to the kitchen, and he, on his hands and knees, starts crawling out of the shed, pulling that mortar behind him because it's tied to the rope, towards these two trees. And in the Shastra it says, Krishna says, I know that these two Jamal Arjuna trees are the sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nalikuvara. And they were cursed by by Narada Muni to stand as trees, and then they would get my darshan when I perform my pastimes here. So now, in the next shloka, Krishna says, in order to honor the word of my pure devotee, I'm now going to give them my darshan. And he pulls the mortar between the two trees, gets stuck, and they come down. The trees come crashing down, and out come these two demigods, and as soon as they see Krishna, they become immediately purified and offer prayers and return back to their own abode, pure, completely purified. So what struck me in that shloka was Krishna says, in order to honor the word of my pure devotee, Narada Muni said that you'll get the darshan of Krishna. So now, to honor the word of my pure devotee, I've got to give my darshan to these two reprobates. I mean, what did Manigriva Nalakuvara do to deserve to get the direct darshan of Krishna? Absolutely nothing. They committed an aparad. But in order to honor the word of his pure devotee, Krishna gave him this darshan. And I remembered that. And I remembered what Prabhupada said, that if they come back, I consider it an accidental fall down. So in order to honor the word of his pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, Krishna arranged for them to come back and leave their bodies in the association of the holy name. This is causeless mercy. Causeless mercy. So we are so fortunate, and we should understand how fortunate we are. We should become very conscious of what our situation is and our service and everything. And remember what Prabhupada told me. First become conscious, then you can become Krishna conscious. Don't be Krishna unconscious. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any comments or questions? Yes. Can you give this Mataji the mic?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for a wonderful class, Prabhu. And thank you for explaining how you said we've come to this point where we are by many pious activities. Maybe you mentioned that, for example, bathing in the Ganga and so on. And I was just wondering, at the same time, I remember in Nectar of Devotion, it is said that actually no matter how many austerities and penances and sacrifices we perform, we cannot come to the point of devotional service unless we receive the mercy of the pure devotee. So I was just wondering, is it possible to not to have any piety from the previous life or this life and still come to the point of devotional service just by the mercy of pure devotee?
Yeah, of course. It's in our Shastra. For example, Migrari the hunter. Everybody understand her question? Can you get the mercy of the Lord if you have no pious activity? You're completely doing sinful activity. So Migrari the hunter, he not only killed animals to eat, but he also half-killed the animals to see them suffer. He got pleasure from seeing the suffering of others. And when Narada Muni was traveling through that forest and saw half-killed animals suffering, who is doing such a thing? Then he came across Magari. He said, no, that's just me. So then he gave him his mercy and became a devotee immediately. You know the story, Magari the hunter? Well, there it is. That's the answer to your question right there. We can also consider ourselves. When we first came to devotional service, we were living lives that were not devotional, were not pious. We were eating cow. The cow, gomata, so dear to Krishna. If you were eating hamburgers, you were eating a cow. We're so sinful. The Vedic culture, the lowest form of human being is the chandala. How low is the chandala? He's a dog eater. What's lower than a dog eater is a cow eater. In the Vedas, no one can even conceive of eating a cow. Even the demons wouldn't consider eating a cow. And yet we ate cow. So we were the most fallen. Krishna picks up the most fallen. And Prabhupada gave us the mercy. He gave us Bhaktivedanta Manor. He gave us the deities. Come, perform devotional service. Follow Lord Chaitanya's three-point program, chanting, dancing, and feasting on Mahaprasad. What more mercy can you have than that? So yeah, the answer to your question is yes. Causeless mercy. We don't deserve such mercy. It's causeless mercy. by the pure devotee and by the Lord. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you so much. It's because I think sometimes we may think, oh yeah, I must have done so much in my previous life to come to this point, but I feel like it's maybe better not to think like that, maybe better to think that actually, no, it's really causeless mercy. And I think that keeps us humble.
So we have to show gratitude. We have to say thank you to Krishna and Prabhupada for taking us out of Maya and putting us on the path of devotional service. So gratitude, we really have to show gratitude. And how do we show gratitude? By our chanting sincerely, devotionally, the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada stressed this above all other services, because by this service you can become purified, your heart can become clean, your mind can become clean, giving up all material desires and just surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. So someone asked me, what is the secret to making advancement in devotional service? I said, it's in the bag. The secret is in the bag. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for sharing your reflections on the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. I was just reflecting.
I can't hear a word you're saying.
Sorry, is it better now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. So I just wanted to ask that, you know, you talked about maintenance and how that is very difficult in the initial part of your talk, and how it is in the mode of goodness. So I was just wondering that, you know, one of the very key aspects that Srila Prabhupada gave us is also about sharing Krishna consciousness with others. So how do we actually, I mean, if you can probably rather share some thoughts of like, how do we help others also to maintain their Krishna consciousness?
I actually answered this yesterday, but perhaps you weren't at yesterday's class. So the question is, how do we share with others? How are we actually sharing? And I explained that Prabhupada taught me. Because everything I'm saying, I received from Prabhupada, okay? It's not coming from me that I'm that I'm so intelligent. Not at all. Everything I know, I was taught by Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said that the mentality of a thief is that he takes the property that belongs to someone else and keeps it for his own benefit. And the mentality of a sadhu is that he takes everything and shares, uses it for the benefit of others, because he knows that everything belongs to the Lord. So this knowledge that we've received from the Shastra that Prabhupada is giving us, Prabhupada taught me, this knowledge belongs to Krishna. And if I just take this knowledge for my own benefit so that I can become liberated, I have the mentality of a thief. But if I take this knowledge that belongs to Krishna and I share it with others, then I have the mentality of a sadhu. Sadhu reva samantavya. That's what I just quoted, that shloka from the Gita. So Krishna will consider you a sadhu when you distribute the mercy that you received to others. So we do that in different ways. We do prasad distribution, food for life. We distribute books. We go out in the street, we chant the holy name. So we're distributing the Maha Mantra for people to hear, books for them to read, prasad for them to eat. That's how we're sharing with others. And that's how you become a sadhu, and that's how you become recognized. Because that's what all sadhus do, what all rishis do, what all acharyas do, is they share, they work for the benefit of others.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, my question was a little bit more than that, that, you know, once we have shared, then it's also about helping others to maintain it. So on that journey to maintain the sadhana, were there anything that you observed how Srila Prabhupada was doing in helping? Because, of course, he had disciples all over the world. So,
okay, so what was it, what's her last point?
Maintaining, helping to maintain others.
Saying,
Oh, to devotees who have fallen, how do you help them? Come back to the devotional service? Well, that's a very difficult thing to do. Sorry?
The question is, when we bring someone to Christian consciousness, how do we help them maintain?
How do you help them maintain so they don't fall down? Okay, everyone had a different... they heard something different. Well... the thing is this, how to maintain. You have to show love and affection and friendship to devotees. You have to honor and respect devotees. You can't find fault with devotees because devotees are very sensitive people. You have to be sensitive in order to understand this philosophy. You have to have an open heart to surrender to Krishna, who you have never met, you've never seen, you're just believing what someone else is telling you that he's God. So, okay, let me try this process and see if it works. That's how we all come. No one's convinced of anything. We have to treat such persons with such care because we're their servant, das, 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 anudas. So the new devotee who just comes, he's a my Prabhu. I'm his servant. What? How can I serve you? Do you have any questions? Are you hungry? You know, whatever. You ask and you serve. And that's how you benefit him. You're always a servant. That's how I started this talk. That's your eternal constitutional position. You're always serving others. You never think, what is my benefit? Because if you think, what is my benefit, then it's not service. Then it's business. I'm doing this to get this. That's what business is. You do something to get a result. But services, you do it out of devotion, out of love and affection. And Krishna takes care of your benefit. You don't have to think about it because Krishna will take care of it. So I thought about that in the early days, and I was thinking, well, who can take care of my benefit better? Me? I can make arrangements and plans and everything for my own benefit. Or Krishna, who can do a better job for my benefit? And I came to the conclusion that Krishna could do a better job, so let him do it. I'll just go out and serve. And I had a wonderful life. Krishna took care of everything I needed. So what I'm sharing with you is my experience. I've experienced what the Shastra says, what the Guru says is 100% fact. Did I answer your question? Okay, good. Okay. So now it's time to honor Mahaprasad. 3-point program. We chanted, we danced, now we're going to honor Mahaprasad. Srila Prabhupada ki! Thank you very much.